based upon human dignity, the nature of a human person, that we protect certain human rights.
Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And then amongst these human rights, the very first one is going to be the right to life, and then the right to liberty, especially religious liberty, and then how freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly and association, how these things actually hang together or they fall together. That a society that doesn't respect the free exercise of religion also will tend not to respect freedom of speech or freedom of press or the right to life or rights of private property, that these civil liberties tend to hang together.
You can meet and hear Ryan Anderson making the case for our first freedoms at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
Because they really do truly care more about abortion than actually having the Democratic Party win.
This was not a good faith effort to get someone to bake a cake that meant a lot to him. He was trolling Jack Phillips. And you know who's trolling Jack Phillips now also? The state of Colorado.
It violates the narrative that the mainstream media has chosen, which is the only way you can ever write about homosexuality is with gays as victims of oppression.
It is a horrendous act of pastoral malpractice to deprive the congregation of the content of the small catechism.
Confessional Lutheran missionary campus pastors love Issues Etc.
I like to describe myself as pro-life, pro-marriage, pro-family, pro-child. Sometimes the last one I say pro-baby, because all children begin as babies. That third one, pro-family, that's a hard one to define. What does it mean? That's where kind of in the realm of prudence a lot of times. What's good for families? People who have large families nowadays often have a social stigma attached to them. A woman at the grocery store with more than three kids, the acceptable number of children, or perhaps a little over the acceptable number of children in our society, might get some stares, some stern looks, or maybe even some less than friendly looks from people who wonder or may even say aloud, what's she doing with all those kids? What's going on there? And that's just the social stigma. What about the failure of the government to promote families? Here in the United States, it's a problem. Is there any place in the world where families are being promoted, encouraged, where family is not just viewed as a byproduct of human reproduction, but in fact, part of the fabric of society, of a free society? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Monday afternoon, August the 20th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban and Hungary's Year of Families. Dr. Alan Carlson will be our guest for the first few minutes of the program. A little bit later, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller joins us. We'll be introducing the book of the Bible, the prophet Isaiah, often called the fifth gospel, and we'll find out why with him. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our call in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and our listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban and that country's Year of Families 2018, Dr. Alan Carlson, a regular guest, President Emeritus of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society, author of several books, including Family Questions, Reflections on the American Social Crisis, and a recent column titled The Truth About Hungary. Dr. Carlson, welcome back.
Happy to be with you.
Very few people follow what's going on in Europe, much less a country like Hungary nowadays, and our news doesn't really cover it either. Why should we care what's going on there?
Because what's happening in Hungary is remarkable. We are seeing a very conscious effort by a group of dedicated men and women to create in the postmodern world, a Christian commonwealth, a nation guided by Christian men and women seeking to protect the family, to protect the faith, and to raise godly children. It's really quite remarkable.
And I take it that that is bucking the trend of Greater Europe.
Greater Europe, most of the European Union, with a handful of important exceptions, Hungary, Poland, Croatia, perhaps Slovenia, is deeply and thoroughly secularized, have adopted a radical sexual agenda, deeply hostile to children, to child life, quite content to see Muslim immigration basically replace Europeans as a solution to their population problems.
Tell us a little bit about Viktor Orban, the Prime Minister of Hungary.
Well, he was born in 1963 in a rural background, very rural, lived a fairly primitive existence in a small farm town, but was strong, an athlete early on, loved playing European football or soccer, won a scholarship to a residential school nearby, was groomed actually to become a future political leader at a new law school founded in the 1980s by anti-communists, by liberal anti-communists, and funded particularly by the expatriate Hungarian George Soros. He and other figures at that law school formed an alliance of democratic youth in the late 1980s. He received a great break in 1989 when the longtime leader of Hungary, kind of governing as sort of a genial communist dictator, died, and Viktor Orban was asked to give one of the speeches at the great national ceremony marking his death. What he did was quite courageous. He denounced the communist government, which was still in control. He said, we need to overthrow it, and astonishingly, he wasn't arrested, and in fact, his speech marked the beginning of the end of the old communist regime, which had disappeared by 1990. For several years, he was the leader of a political party which had seats in parliament, which was liberal. And by liberal, I mean in the European sense of they were pro-free market by and large, but they also were libertarian in moral values, anti-clerical, anti-religious. And then something happened in the mid-1990s. His political party, called Fidesz, still mainly involved leadership, involved people he'd met at the small law school in the 1980s, they went through a conversion experience, both politically and religiously. Most of them became Christians. They had not been so before. Also, they abandoned their fashionable liberalism because they saw it wasn't working. They thought they were going to get a nice, free, and open society. What they got instead was modern feminism, modern hedonism, the sexual revolution, and they rebelled against that, shifted the direction of the Fidesz party to pro-family, pro-life, pro-religion. He began courting openly religious leaders, and himself became a Christian. He embraced Calvinism of a good friend of his, a Calvinist pastor, was baptized. His civil marriage, he had that recognized as a church marriage, and Fidesz became a Christian party.
Tell us about Hungary's Year of Families.
Well, in 2018, the Hungarian government chose that to be the Year of Families. Now, this was building on a record. The Fidesz party has been ruling Hungary since 2010, and most of that time with what they call a supermajority, which has given the party extraordinary powers to make changes, all within the rules of the Constitution, so to speak, including a complete rewrite of the Constitution with an emphasis on Christianity, on protection and defense of the family, on our devotion to children, and on protection of the nation's history. They chose 2018 to be the Year of the Family, which is, again, brought in a new series of policy changes, increasing child allowances. They have a program, something I advocated for the United States a dozen years ago, a program whereby student loan debt would be forgiven. If you have two children, half of your student loan debt is gone. If you have three children, it's all gone. The state will completely forgive your student loan debt. I think it's a great idea. And a series of other policy measures designed to promote larger families, to promote marriage, and to defend the country against those who would attack a pro-family, pro-child policy.
I take it that Viktor Orban and his party do not get very good press sometimes.
I'm afraid the Fidesz party and Viktor Orban in particular are routinely attacked for these policies. They're attacked from the libertarian right for being pro-child, for having policy measures that favor families, say, over automobiles and consumer goods, for being pro-life. They're attacked, again, by the libertarian side. On the left, they're attacked because they're pro-Hungary. They're pro-national. They're anti-cosmopolitan. Orban famously put up a wall. That sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? It was actually a fence around Hungary to keep this a swarm of Muslim refugees from pouring into Hungary 3 or 4 years ago when that was a great crisis in the Balkans. He said the European folks running things in Brussels want to solve Europe's population problem, that is lack of children, by importing others. We want to solve our problem by having our own children and by raising them in a Christian culture. And so he's attacked for that, as you can obviously imagine.
What kind of a relationship does this create within the EU? Because Hungary did join, I think, in 2004. They joined the European Union.
Well, there's occasional threats to punish Hungary for these views, particularly the views on immigration a few years ago. What's happening, though, is that actually Hungary's approach is spreading to other nations. The nation of Poland, under the Law and Justice Party, is adopting policies very much along the lines of Hungary. Similar developments, again, taking place in countries such as Croatia and Slovenia. Again, countries that tend to be a little more traditional in their orientation, but still have a strong sense of their Christian identity and Christian heritage. So, no, Hungary is routinely slammed. The article you mentioned was based on a book written by a Hungarian journalist named Paul Envy, which is basically just one harsh condemnation of everything Viktor Orban and the Fidesz party stand for. That's pretty typical.
We're talking with Dr. Alan Carlson about Hungary's Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, and Hungary's Year of Families. He's President Emeritus of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society. More with him after this.
When the historian's ideological bias distorts or ignores evidence from the past, a bad kind of revisionism emerges.
Dr. Mark Kaltoff of Hillsdale College talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
It masquerades as honest history. Such revisionism needs to be exposed and dismantled. It undermines proper understanding of our world. It has been said those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. In this case, failure to expose bad revisionism means that those who do not know the past are condemned to suffer at the hands of biased ideologues who claim they do.
You can meet and hear Dr. Mark Kaltoff making the case against revisionist history at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. Please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Hungary's Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, and Hungary's Year of Families. Dr. Alan Carlson is our guest. Dr. Carlson, I want to rewind to something you said earlier in our conversation that probably caught the ear of our listeners. You mentioned the name of George Soros as someone who had financed the university where Viktor Orban attended. What's the relationship there? Many people hear George Soros and they start thinking right-wing conspiracy theories about the man.
Well, Soros did fund this group early on, but by the mid-90s, as the Fidesz party turned against liberal hedonism, turned against cosmopolitanism, turned to a defense of the Hungarian nation, to a defense of Christianity, to a defense of children, they parted ways with Soros, and today Soros is sort of their major enemy, because he's still funding groups in Hungary which oppose the Fidesz agenda. Most recently, there's been a battle over control of a university that has been funded by Soros in Hungary, which is strongly opposed to the Fidesz agenda.
There's a story from Reuters, in fact, about Hungary deciding to cut off financing for gender studies. What happened there?
Well, yeah, that just happened. I just found out about that. And that's very much in line with the way Orban and his party are operating. They're cutting off funding for gender studies of the sort that you find in strongly feminist and gender-bending circles. It's a sign, though, of something that's really important here, is that the Fidesz party is a conservative party, a Christian party, but Americans have been voting for what they thought were conservative and at least Christian-friendly parties for a long time. When those parties win, particularly the Republican Party, they expect something to come from it, and hardly anything ever does. That's because the permanent government is left unchanged. The court system has remained hostile to families, certainly to human life. After 50 years, the abortion decision of Roe v. Wade is still there. It's still in place. Nothing's really changed. In Hungary, Orban and his party decided, when we win, we're going to rule. We're going to actually change things, including the permanent government. And so what? Yeah, they're stripping away the ideological foundations where they can, legally and properly. For example, in this case, state funding of higher education. They're taking out things that are anti-Christian and anti-life. Another example that they did 7 or 8 years ago is that the public broadcasting system in Hungary was very left-wing. It was funded by the state, but very left-wing. There was nothing in law or the Constitution which said that public broadcasting had to be left-wing, had to be socialist-dominated, had to be anti-family. So what did they do? They simply passed a law allowing Orban and his party to fire everybody, pretty much everybody in public broadcasting, replace them with new people who with a different agenda. Now, some people are shocked by that, and I guess I'd say, well, why? Why is it the rule of law that even if conservatives win the political elections, why does the left still continue to get to run the public state universities? Why does the left still get to run the public broadcasting system? There's no good answer. I guess Orban knows how to win, and he doesn't care what, I guess you'd say, polite conversation in the salons of Budapest, the country's capital, have to say.
The government, the form of government there in Hungary is a parliamentary republic, and it seems that, at least in the case of Orban and his party, they've been able to use that system quite efficiently. It's quite different from the way the United States structured its government. It has some similarities, but quite different. How would you explain that?
Well, part of it is just they're willing to do things which could be done here, but everybody's afraid to do it. They have used every vehicle allowed to them through the Constitution and through the rules set up by the Constitution that was adopted in 1990 to implement their agenda. They've done nothing outside the rules. They've pushed the rules sometimes as far as they'll go, but they've stayed within the rules. Things like that could happen in the United States. Let me give you one very specific example. The U.S. Constitution allows the American Congress to determine what measures can be allowed in the federal courts. The matters that the federal courts will cover are, in part at least, to be determined by what Congress has to say. Congress can approve or can withdraw from federal court consideration certain measures. For example, Congress could pass a law that said the federal courts may no longer deal with the issues of family life and sexuality. Those are matters left strictly to the states. That would be allowed by our Constitution. But we're terrified to do that because some people would get upset. They'd say, well, that's not really what the Constitution means anymore. The courts get to decide those things. That's not in the Constitution either, but that's the courts have managed to claim that right to make such decisions over time. That's the difference between Hungary and the United States. In Hungary, they're using a system. Again, it's a newer system. It probably makes it much more flexible. This is a system that's been in place 25 years since the fall of communism. But it's allowed them to do things which we can only dream about because we're afraid even to use the constitutional powers that exist, at least in paper, to do something similar.
You had mentioned Poland is kind of beginning to feel some of the influence there. Any place else in the European Union where, looking in from the outside, other governments are saying maybe what Hungary is doing might be a good idea? After all, I believe their GDP is pretty healthy.
Actually, Hungary is doing just fine economically, despite the claims of the critics of Orbán. In fact, a large amount of German investment money is going into Hungary because they see it as an ordered, successful society right now. It tends to be among the former European communist nations in Europe. That's where we see an openness to this kind of approach. I'm afraid the Western nations of France, Germany, and England are having trouble. One other place, though, where there's a bright spot is Italy. The new Italian government has one component of the coalition government is a strong pro-family, pro-life political party. The deputy prime minister of Italy, who comes out of this party, is strongly pro-life and pro-family. They are looking for Italian mechanisms that would be run parallel to Hungary. So I think rather than being sort of a throwback to the old, some older kind of archaic reactionary system, Hungary may be the wave of the future. And again, even in Italy, policies like this are catching on.
What do you foresee kind of the future of this? Because Hungary may be an outlier in the European Union, but the European Union is a pretty big organization now. Where do you see this headed?
Well, I think the European Union is actually, instead of growing stronger, is becoming weaker. The leaders in Brussels made a huge mistake when they tried to move the European Union into the decision maker, the arbiter on family policy questions. That was clearly not something that the central system in Brussels was supposed to be allowed to do. That was left to the individual countries. But they couldn't leave it alone. And that is generating a reaction, a counter-reaction, among countries like Hungary, Poland, Italy, and again, a number of other countries in the former Eastern Bloc, the former communist bloc. They're generating resistance, and I think in the long run it's going to contribute to the weakening, if not the ultimate dissolution of the European Union.
What kind of a time frame do you foresee for that?
I'd say the next 10 or 15 years. Again, this is something quite healthy. Europe, Eastern Europe, parts of Central Europe, Italy, are showing signs of life. It's a loving of life and a loving of a reconnection with their Christian past. It's a pretty remarkable thing. Don't let the New York Times trick you, or even the Wall Street Journal, which doesn't understand this phenomenon either. They're far too libertarian to get it. Something remarkable is happening there, and it's something that Christians in America should applaud and watch carefully.
Obviously, for different reasons, England, Britain has decided to make an exit from the European Union in March of 2019. Is that, again, obviously for different reasons, is that kind of the beginning of the end?
Well, the British did it partly for economic reasons and partly for reasons very peculiar to Great Britain. I wish I could tell you that there was a strong pro-family, pro-life movement emerging in Britain as well. It just, to my knowledge, doesn't seem to be happening. There are some good people there, some good organizations that I've worked with in the past, but they are definitely still very much in retreat. But, again, that's a sign of an economic fracturing of the European Union. I think what I'm looking at here is the cultural and social fracturing of the European Union, which is something they could have easily avoided, just stay out of those questions, but they couldn't help themselves. They had to get in there, had to try to transform Christian peoples into post-Christian, anti-Christian peoples, and it's just not working.
What is that impulse, Dr. Carlson? It's not only found in the European Union, but we see it in our government as well, in the Canadian government. What's happening?
Well, it's the logical endpoint of, I think, the liberal idea. At times, liberalism has worked in effective balance with Christian principles and Christian values and a Christian culture. And we've seen a reasonably successful society, which balances individual freedom with a sense of Christian heritage and Christian responsibility. That was true in the United States for a long time, but not so true now. The liberal idea is ultimately the liberation of the individual, particularly from things like Christianity and from other oppressive items from the past, of liberation of the individual from family bonds, liberation from cultural expectations, liberation from just about everything other than the desires of the individual. That's, I think, the political description of it. There's probably a biblical understanding of it as well. It's been said that Satan was the first liberal.
Finally, then, we have kind of a framework. We have an example set here by Hungary of a pro-life revolution, if we can call it that. Is such a thing feasible in the United States?
Oh, I think very much so. But we just have to have, like I say, some political courage. Some people willing to use all the tools that are available. Tools that are going to drive the New York Times, even the Wall Street Journal, to outrage. Tools that are going to, again, push the tools that are available as far as they can go. Certainly, I think there still is in the United States a fundamental sense, same sense of a civilizational heritage rooted in Christianity and in communitarian pro-family values. I've written a number of books which describe that in the past. And I think we're on the verge, or we face in America the opportunity to see a rebirth of a pro-family, pro-life, pro-baby culture, the kind of thing you were talking about at the beginning. I think it's very feasible. It's just going to rely on a new level of political courage, which we haven't seen recently among our so-called pro-family leaders.
Should we see that all of one piece? That's, for me, that was the kind of political insight wherein I realized that to completely describe my position, which is not bound to any party, I've been independent for some time, I can say, and not in any particular order, but I think they all go together, pro-life, pro-family, pro-marriage, pro-child.
I think they all go together. I think that's certainly the message of the Christian, not just the Christian heritage, but the Christian theology of the family, which goes back to the first century. It was a time of moral disorder, sexual disorder in the Roman Empire. And the Christians come along with this pro-marriage, pro-family, pro-life engagement. It shocked the Romans. It was one of the reasons the Romans were quite happy to persecute the Christians so off and on for 300 years. But the Christians stuck with it. And it was all of one piece. There were no parts that could be discarded. And when Christianity has been healthy, it's always been seen as parts of a whole, of a moral, social, cultural, and most especially a religious whole.
Dr. Alan Carlson is President Emeritus of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society. He is author of several books, including Family Questions, Reflections on the American Social Crisis, and a recent column titled The Truth About Hungary. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Carlson, thank you very much for your time.
You are welcome.
When we come back from this break, we are going to introduce a book of the Bible, a big one, not only in terms of its volume in the Old Testament, it takes up a lot of space there, but also in terms of its theology, the prophet Isaiah, his book, with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller on the other side of the break, live this Monday afternoon, August the 20th.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes. Dedicated customer service and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Greetings to you from the heart of Texas. I am Pastor Mark Knuckles, the senior pastor of St. Paul Lutheran Church and School. We are the LCMS Mother Church of Austin and are situated just blocks from the University of Texas. Liturgical in worship and confessional in teaching, we are a dual parish with the only Lutheran deaf congregation in the Austin area, Jesus Lutheran Church of the Deaf. Come see what God is doing among us through His Word and His sacraments.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Pacifica, California. Messiah Lutheran, Danville, California. Faith Lutheran, Capistrano Beach, California. Grace Lutheran, San Mateo, California. Our Savior Lutheran, Grand Rapids, Michigan. St. Paul Lutheran, Hamel, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Brookfield, Illinois. Grace Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. St. John's Lutheran, Mayville, Wisconsin. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Crestwood, Missouri. Faith Lutheran, Plano, Texas. St. Paul Lutheran, Austin, Texas. University Hills Lutheran, Denver, Colorado. St. John Lutheran, Topeka, Kansas. Peace Lutheran, Alma, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Imperial, Nebraska. And Trinity Lutheran, St. Charles, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.